Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In the story of Don Quixote, the author Miguel Cervantes tells, among other things, what Don Quixote ate for dinner every day of the week. This, in part, became the inspiration for a book entitled Cooking from the Heart of Spain, Food of La Mancha, written by Janet Mendel, an American woman who has lived in Spain for approximately 40 years. This book, and the name of the author, ignited my spontaneous curiosity. So when Janet Mendel and I visited by phone from her home on the southern coast of Spain in June 2007, I asked about her focus and inspiration to write a cookbook centered around Don Quixote de la Mancha.
Well, for one thing, for a writer, Don Quixote, Cervantes, the author of Don Quixote, starts that book about Don Quixote by setting the scene and establishing his character by telling us what Don Quixote had for dinner every day. And for a food writer, that's a real inspiration. So that was my starting point.
And where did you go from there?
Well, I had actually first visited the area, La Mancha, to do an article about saffron, which is grown there. And I liked the region very much, and I liked the food. And I realized that there were quite a few gourmet products that came from La Mancha. Saffron, of course, olive oil, manchego cheese comes from La Mancha, serrano ham and partridge, and incredible amounts of good wine. Yeah, I've written four other books about Spanish food. And so La Mancha was an opportunity to look in depth at a single region that's hardly touched on in other Spanish cookbooks. So from the Quixote inspiration, then I started looking at, well, what have we got in La Mancha?
You mentioned that in Don Quixote, the book tells what he had for dinner every night.
Right.
I'm wondering if what he ate at the time of his fictional life is a different kind of food than what's available now in the same region.
Well, that's a good question. Actually, not. There's a couple of things that are a bit arcane, in which case people are not totally sure just what it was that he was eating. Cervantes tells what he had just every day of the week. So he had an olla. Now, an olla is a great big stew pot, a soup pot, and it's really a boiled dinner. And the one that Don Quixote ate was rather more beef than mutton. And that means that it was actually kind of a poor person's mutton was more prized than old beef was. I mean, that may sound odd to Americans, but in fact, it was true in those days. And then he had salpicón most nights, most suppers. And salpicón is just leftovers. It's the boiled meat and the boiled chickpeas, garbanzos, from that stew pot, and any vegetables that are left, all kind of fried up together, hash. And then he had duelos y quebrantos on Saturdays. Well, that's the one that's a bit arcane. Duelos y quebrantos actually means lamentations and sorrows, something like that. But it's usually interpreted today as scrambled eggs with bacon. Well, there's a long story about how they got to that point, which is that in Cervantes' time, the shepherds would bring to the master, the owner of the herd, any sheep that had died during the week. And the meat would be cooked up with, or been injured by wolves or whatever, and meat would be cooked up. The brains would be scrambled with eggs to make a Saturday dish. And that's how supposedly the duelos y quebrantos came about.
I'm not sure I see the connection, but do you?
Well, it's been reinterpreted, I think. I think originally it was like eggs mixed with the brains and other parts of the sheep. Okay, and now they've just substituted bacon instead of the brains.
Well, Janet Mendel, author of Cooking from the Heart of Spain, tell us about the different kinds of recipes. Perhaps we could start with some of your favorites that are in your book.
Okay. Well, one of my favorites is garlic soup. I mean, the French are famous for their onion soup, and the Spanish are famous for their garlic soup. And it's really peasant food. I mean, it's really nothing more than olive oil, lots of garlic, and bread. And the bread cooks in either the water or the broth, whichever you're using, and almost soaks it all up. So it's almost a dry soup instead of... and then an egg is poached in the soup. And that's it. But it is sensational. That's one of my favorite dishes.
And where do you go from there? What other dishes do you lead to after you've begun with soup?
There are a lot of very good vegetable dishes. One is called pesto. Now, that may sound like Italian pesto, but it's actually a dish more like ratatouille, the French dish with eggplant and zucchini and tomatoes and peppers. In Don Quixote's time, it wouldn't have had the tomatoes because that was before tomatoes, I mean, the New World had been discovered, but tomatoes hadn't yet made it onto the menu in Europe, in the Old World by that point. Other good vegetable dishes, eggplant timbal, which is a eggplant cooked with in a mold with eggs. And, of course, there's the Spanish potato tortilla. Tortilla in Spain is actually like a thick omelet. It's not the Mexican tortilla at all. There are wonderful other stews, lots of lamb dishes, including lamb stew, and some migas. Migas means breadcrumbs. And in Spain, it's breadcrumbs fried up with bits of bacon and chorizo sausage. And it's a real shepherd's dish. It's the sort of thing that the shepherds would make out in the fields.
In the 40 or so years that you've been living in the Mediterranean coast of Spain, what changes have you seen in general in Spanish cooking?
Yeah, well, when I first came to this village where I live, it was actually fairly primitive. I mean, there were still people who didn't even have a regular stove to cook on. They would cook in the hearth or on charcoal burners set into the kitchen. People did have electricity, but very few, when I first came here, had refrigerators. And also at that time, most all of the food we had was very, very local and very seasonal. Like, you didn't eat artichokes in July because there weren't any. Artichokes were early spring. And you didn't eat oranges in August because the oranges were the winter. And the local market where I still shop, was really a farmer's market. It was what people locally brought to the market and was sold. That's changed enormously. I mean, now we have grapes in June that come from Chile, I mean, from the other side of the world. There's more processed and frozen food now.
Have you considered the effect on humans as a species of having the same availability of food year-round instead of having the cyclical times of food that you've mentioned?
Yes, I think about it every day because I'm incredibly seasonal. I refuse to buy out-of-season things, even if they're available now. And I also am growing more and more of my own stuff as I see that the local markets are beginning to bring stuff from far away. Southern Spain, because it has such year-round growing season, grows a lot of produce which is shipped to Northern Europe. And so we have, you know, winter tomatoes, and they're terrible.
But are they grown in Southern Spain?
Yes. So I don't eat tomatoes in the winter. Well, I may, you know, I may buy canned tomatoes and I may freeze my own if I have a bumper crop. I don't buy tomatoes in the market, even though they're grown locally, because they're out of season. They're not. They're grown under hothouse conditions, and they don't have any flavor or texture.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Janet Mendel from her home in the Costa del Sol, southeast Spain. She's the author of Cooking from the Heart of Spain, Food of La Mancha. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. As a musical interlude, before we continue with our interview with Janet Mendel, I'd like to offer a song from the musical The Man from La Mancha, written by Dale Wasserman, with music by Mitch Lee, and lyrics by Joe Darien. As the story goes, Aldonza was a person that Don Quixote has chosen, who worked in a bar. She doesn't quite know what to make of this, and when Don Quixote sends Sancho Panza asking for a token to carry into battle, she assumes he wants what every man wants and angrily tosses him a dish rag. Aldonza is intrigued, however, by Don Quixote's strange words and his gentle manner. And when the old man successfully defends her against a whole band of manhandling hooligans, she's finally won over to his quest, which he describes to her in song as the impossible dream. This version of the impossible dream is sung by Richard Kiley from the 1965 original Broadway cast recording.
Impossible dream to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love chased from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man, scorned and covered with scars, still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with Janet Mendel, the author of Cooking from the Heart of Spain, Food of La Mancha. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Janet, what prompted you to move to Spain and stay for 40 years?
Well, when I came here, I didn't realize I was going to become an expatriate and stay. I was really just taking a year or two off from my work, and I was a journalist in Chicago area, and my then husband, and we stayed until the money ran out, and then we started looking, rather than go back and take up where we left off, we started looking for ways to earn a living here, and we stayed.
And you worked as a journalist?
I did some freelance work after I got here, and then eventually was able to, there were more and more, especially British people, settling in this area because it's a very beautiful, beautiful area with a gorgeous climate, and so those sun-starved Brits came down, flocked down here, and so there became more service industries to for these English-speaking people, including a English language magazine. And I started writing for that magazine when it was just a little bitty nothing, and it grew into quite a fat, glossy, sophisticated, professional magazine. And I wrote cooking columns and lots of other feature articles for that magazine for 30 years. I became slowly specialized in food. I've never been a professional chef. I'm a journalist. And I think it was my reporter's instinct that sent me searching out recipes, talking to people all the time, because I've always been fascinated by what people eat and how they grow it and where it comes from and what they might eat for special holidays and occasions and what they ate when there wasn't any food available and that sort of thing.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. What do people eat, the average person, in your region of Spain, perhaps starting with breakfast?
Okay, well, breakfast, there's actually two breakfasts. The first meal of the day is very light. It would be coffee or hot milk for the children and a piece of bread or maybe a roll. And then a second breakfast, whether you're a school child or a workman out on a building site, for example, and or a farmer out in the field, would come around 10 o'clock and would be something sturdier, especially for a working person. Maybe a thick sandwich with a slab of that tortilla, the egg and potato omelet. Another coffee, or even some of the workmen drink beer with their mid-morning snack. And then the main meal of the day is at around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which we call midday, though I understand that's not exactly midday. And that would be the heaviest meal, which would consist of a first course, which could be a salad, it could be a soup, it could be something like lentils or beans, and then followed by the main course, which could be fish, meat, or chicken, possibly not with additional vegetables, if you've had vegetables in with that first course, but usually with tata frita, fried with French fries, except they're Spanish fries here.
So that would be appropriate.
And usually fruit for dessert. Maybe some kind of a pudding like arroz con leche, creamy rice pudding on some occasions. Then in the afternoon at 6 o'clock comes merienda, which is late afternoon snack. That could be cookies and milk for kids or something of that sort. And then because dinner, supper, is so late in this country, meaning after 9, even 9 o'clock for school children and 10 or 11 on weekends for adults, usually people will go out to tapa bars and have little snacks, perhaps with a glass of wine or a short beer, a draft beer. And so that's how tapas eased those long hours between one meal and the next.
What I'm wondering, Janet, is, can the average family who may not live in a city afford to go out and eat?
People don't eat out in restaurants that often at all, except, you know, the business class may, like working people, office people may eat out at, instead of that long lunchtime, that long dinner hour at the midday, the 2 to 4, most stores and shops and offices close from 2 until 5. And it's still common for I keep wanting to say a working man. It isn't always by any means a working man to go home for that main meal of the day and then go back to work at 5 o'clock. But people do go out for tapas, even though they may not go out for a dinner, okay?
And tapas are more of a snack.
Yes. Tapas, they're little, small portions that are served with wine, sherry, and beer, not with cocktails. And the word tapas actually only means something that's served in a wine bar. If you serve the same food at home, then it becomes an aperitif. It's not a tapa anymore.
Over the 40 or so years that you've lived in Spain, what kinds of social changes have you seen? You commented a moment ago about a working man, but obviously I believe you implied working people. What sort of changes have you seen in gender equality, for example?
Well, there's been huge changes in the time I've been here. I mean, the most important one, of course, was the end of the dictatorship when Franco died in 1975. And the following year, the new constitution was adopted in 76. We now have a constitutional monarchy in Spain. And all political parties were legalized. Before, there were none. There were no opposition parties. I mean, there was Franco's party, and that was a dictatorship. After that, things changed incredibly. I mean, rapidly. This was even before the European Union. During the dictatorship, there was only one religion, the Catholic Church. There was no such thing as birth control. There was no such thing as women's rights. This changed enormously, and it changed very rapidly.
What years did that begin?
76, the new constitution. Freedom of the press, everything began to change.
So how would you characterize it now? And I assume that you return to the United States and follow the changes that have occurred in this country. And then perhaps you could make some comparisons.
It has changed. It definitely has changed, both because the legal climate and just the openness of the society has changed in these, how many years are we talking about now, 30, 25 years. It's a very open society. It's still a very tolerant society, though that's being tested by we had Islamic terrorism in Spain. When you have events like that, the level of tolerance changes, I think. It's a good place to live. I wouldn't still be here. It's a great place to live. Where I'm sitting right now, I'm looking out my window from my desk, actually. And in the foreground are three of my olive trees. And I look down a long ravine to sort of rolling hills. And then beyond that is the blue Mediterranean. And on a very clear day, which is not today, I can see North Africa. I can see Morocco from where I sit. It's that close. And a lot of that influence, because the Moors conquered Spain in 711 and hung around for almost 800 years, there's a great deal of Moorish Islamic influence in Spain, especially in architecture. Customs, art, and, of course, in the food. Particular spices such as saffron, the use of rice, even the olive oil, because, of course, the Moors and the Jewish people, the Sephardic Jews that inhabited Spain for centuries, neither of those groups used the fat of the pig, lard. And so olive oil became extremely important in the cuisine. And it still is. Spain produces more olive oil than in any other country in the world.
Even though we see in the stores more Italian olive oil
That's
than
right.
Spanish
you know
olive
what?
Oil.
A lot of it is produced in Spain, shipped to Italy, rebottled, and sent out as, now I think the labeling is a little better. They used to just call it Italian olive oil. Now it's called bottled in Italy, something like that. I have oil from my own trees, my own olives. Often it's enough to last me the full year, and I don't use any other cooking oil at all, exclusively olive oil.
Janet Mendel, throughout your book, Cooking from the Heart of Spain. You have lots of stories that precede the recipes. I wonder if you could share one with us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, this was, there's a recipe that I, in the book called Wedding Stew with Chicken and Meatballs. And the reason it's called Wedding Stew or Guiso de Bodas is because it's one of the dishes supposedly served at the wedding feast of Camacho. This is in the story of Don Quixote. It's certainly the most memorable meal in the whole story of Don Quixote. And this is the wedding feast of a rich man named Camacho, who doesn't, by the way, get the girl. Don Quixote and Sancho Panza encounter some 50 cooks at work preparing the meal. A whole young steer stuffed with a dozen suckling pigs is roasting on a huge spit. Lamb, hare, and chickens are stewing in enormous earthenware ollas, pots. Loaves of bread are piled into a mountain, and whole cheeses stacked like bricks form a wall. A treasure chest of spices is at hand. Cooks are frying sweet pastries in great cauldrons of olive oil, then dipping them into boiling honey syrup. Sancho cannot contain himself. He begs permission to dip a crust of bread into one of the cook pots and is bidden to skim off what he likes and take the ladle too. Happy, he scores 3 chickens and a couple geese for breakfast. And so this chicken stew, which is rich with ground almonds, might well have been stewing in those earthenware pots at that wedding feast. And this is also called chicken pepitoria, and it's a favorite fiesta dish in Spain.
Well, Janet Mendel, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious from your home in Andalusia, Spain, on the Costa del Sol. And before we close, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
Well, after all of that, I couldn't mention anything other than Don Quixote de la Mancha by Cervantes, which was both inspiration for my book, both for the traveling, where I was going, and also for the recipes I was tracking. It's sometimes called the first novel, okay? So it's worth reading. Obviously, if your Spanish isn't so great, you might want to read it in translation. So I recommend translation that came out a couple of years ago by American Edith Grossman of Don Quixote. And it's a good read. It's a good read. It's a good story.
Well, Janet Mendel, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
This interview with Janet Mendel, the author of Cooking from the Heart of Spain, Food of La Mancha, was recorded in June 2007 and originally broadcast in January 2008. The book she recommends, not surprisingly, is Don Quixote by Miguel Cervantes, in the English translation by Edith Grossman. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available free online at www.radiocurious.org, where you'll find approximately 250 archive editions. They're also available in CD format by mail for $12 each. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our phone is 707-462-6541, and our email address is curious@radiocurious.org. We appreciate your thoughts, ideas, and suggestions, and look forward to hearing from you. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm attorney Barry Vogel, host and producer. Thanks for joining us.